Welcome to Garden Talk. We're taking a look at growing fruit in Wisconsin. I'm Jill Nadeau. I'm filling in for the vacationing Larry Mueller. Thanks for joining us today on the Ideas Network. In the studio with me are three UW Extension specialists. Amaya Atucha, she is the UW Extension Fruit Crop Production Specialist and Assistant Professor of Horticulture at UW-Madison. Patricia McManus, the UW Extension Fruit Crops Plant Pathologist and Professor and Chair in the Department of Plant Pathology at UW-Madison, and Christelle Godeau, UW Extension Fruit Crop Entomology and Assistant Professor in the Department of Entomology. What questions do you have about growing fruit? Tree fruit, berries, grapes? Give us a call. Our number is 800-642-1234. You can also send an email to ideas@wpr.org or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. Well, ladies, it's so great to have you back with us.
Thank you.
Amaya, let's just start with you. I'm thinking we had late snows, we had cold temperatures. How has that affected our fruit crop?
I think overall, everything is sort of delayed a little bit, or it was delayed with this warm temperature in the last week. Everything has catch up. So that's the main difference. I think it was like sort of like a long spring at the very beginning, but now I think everything has already pretty much catch up.
It was almost like a time-lapse photo of seeing things bloom and whatnot. So we didn't really have any damage.
No, actually, it was a really nice spring in terms of frost. We haven't had anything, and we hope it stays that way.
Yes, we do. Hopefully, with our temperatures this weekend, I think we don't have to worry about that. Christelle, you wrote an article in the last issue of the Wisconsin Fruit Newsletter about the brown marmorated stink bug. Why don't you tell us a little bit about the latest developments in that area?
Sure. Thank you, Jill. So we have been talking for several years now about this brown marmorated stink bug, and people may have seen them in their houses, especially if they're in the Madison area, Milwaukee, like urban areas, where you have those big stink bugs that are just walking around your house. Some people report them even in the wintertime. So when it gets warmer, they tend to walk around, but they overwinter in houses, and that's where people see them at the moment. What we've been doing also is monitoring for their populations outside of houses. We get reports from people from houses, but we have traps where we're trying to monitor them in different crops because they are very polyphagous pests. They feed on a lot of different plants, including vegetables and ornamentals. Mm-hmm. And we caught our first BMSB this week in a trap, which is a record for Wisconsin. So this is the earliest we've caught them, and it was in an apple orchard.
So that's not a good sign.
So this is not a good forecast. Mm-hmm. But this population right now is not damaging. Obviously, we don't have any fruit at this time. So hopefully it won't be a major bad forecast, but we have to be on the lookout.
Now, you mentioned something in the article about some apps that people can use.
Sure, yes. So that's a new app that has been developed with Minnesota, the University of Minnesota. And it is a very nice app because it allows you to really identify them. So you have tools on that app and distinguishing characteristics for them. But what's also nice is it helps report their distribution. So it's a very nice app that my colleagues put together, and I figured that people could use in Wisconsin.
And how can they get it to download it? Just
on the link that I put, it has the information, the click for downloading on either Androids or iPhones. So
okay, and the
all is there.
And the email and the website for the newsletter is
fruit.wisc.edu.
Okay, great. And we'll repeat that again later, I'm sure.
Thank you.
Now, Patty, in that same newsletter, you talked about soft fungicides. Why don't you tell us what that is? Because I hadn't heard that term before.
Okay, well, the term soft, when it's used to describe pesticides or fungicides, usually refers to something that is not necessarily organic, but is considered lower toxicity both to humans and the environment than a conventional fungicide. So in the newsletter, I mentioned oxidate, which is a hydrogen peroxide type of product, and serenade. And actually, off the top of my head, I can't remember what was in that article, so folks are going to have to look at it. But in general, what we see is that these softer products do have some effect in controlling important diseases. They're usually not as effective as conventional fungicides, so they are better than doing nothing usually not as good as conventional fungicides. But if you integrate the use of these softer fungicides with sanitation, so cleaning up leaf litter and that sort of thing, sometimes you can get acceptable control, particularly for homeowners where you're not going to be selling the fruit, so it doesn't need to be pristine perfect. So the standards are a little higher for commercial growers. They have to please their customers, and customers want clean fruit, but homeowners have a little bit more latitude.
Okay, great. Well, thanks for that information. Another option for growers of fruit. Let's go to the phones. All the lines are filled, so we want to go to Harry in McWanago. Hi, Harry. What's your question for us?
I want to know a good mulch for strawberries because I'm concerned about Roundup carryover in the oat straw that I was purchasing locally.
Amaya, do you want to take that one?
Sure. Anything that is straw, whether it's oats, wheat, soybean, there's also you can use chopped corn stalks that would work. The fact that whether they have residue of herbicide or not, that would depend on where you get it from. Mm-hmm. But all of those are excellent materials for mulching strawberries.
Okay. Hopefully, Harry, you'll be able to find some. And let's go to Peter next. Hi, Peter. He's in Madison. What question do you have for us?
Good morning. My question is pawpaw trees. I've been interested in the fruit for a long time, and I now have a chance to place like five of them on my property. I'm wondering if they're appropriate for the climate in Madison, and if so, what time of year is best for planting?
Yes, they would grow very well here in Madison. The best time to plant is the same as with any fruit crop. It's usually in the spring while the soil has already been thawed and it's not extremely wet. So when we get the first thawing of all the snow and the soils are saturated, it's not a good time to plant them. It's also a little bit cold and you're planting these new little tiny trees or even sprout seeds if that's where you're going to plant. So I would wait until temperatures are a little bit higher, so maybe in April. And yeah, they work really well. They prefer at the very beginning sort of shaded areas. They grow better in shaded areas. Their leaves are very sensitive to sun exposure, especially the young leaves, the new trees. So if you are looking for places, just try to find something that has a little bit of shade.
And actually, I can tell you, Peter, I've got lots of experience in growing pawpaws and not getting any fruit. So that's the tricky part is getting the fruit to grow. And I've heard a bunch of different things from putting a dead fish under the tree to going out and with a brush and, you know, pollinating them yourself. Amaya, do you?
Yeah, well, there's two things. One is whether you're getting flowers. And then the other thing is whether you're getting actually fruit. Mm-hmm. So if you don't have any flowers, usually that happens during the earlier years of the trees when the trees are still in the juvenile state. Once you get those flowers, they has to do with pollination. So hand pollinating them really helps.
I really tried. But yeah, the flowers are kind of hidden too, and they're very pretty, but you don't see them very well. So I wish you good luck, Peter. And if you get any fruit, I want to try it because I have not gotten any yet. Let's go to Diane in Prairie du Sac. Hi, Diane.
Good morning, ladies. I have a question regarding fig trees. I dearly love the fruit figs, and I have a fig tree which I've been hauling in and out of the house for the last couple of years, and I'm wondering, is there any place that I could put a tree outside and just let it be? Put it in the ground, but what would be your recommendation?
Not with figs. They are not cold hardy enough to be able to survive Wisconsin winters, so you will have to keep hauling that tree in and out, unfortunately. I'm sorry.
Will she get any figs, do you think?
Well, she could. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, you know, we've had good luck with, you know, lime trees and lemon trees
multiple
and things
citrus,
like that.
Yeah, people sure. Mm-hmm. can grow citrus inside, so I think that you could also have figs. You're not going to have, you know, probably as many as if you were in a warmer climate, but you could still get some.
Right. Okay. Let's go then on to Monique in Sugar Grove. Hi, Monique.
Hi. Thanks so much for taking my call. We noticed in our small orchard about 10 fruit trees or so, pears, plums, cherries, apples, that some of them were getting defoliated. And last night we realized that, taking a flashlight out there, that June bugs were eating them, the leaves. We're wondering if there's any preventative measures we could take for next year or anything you could suggest for this year to mitigate some of that damage.
Christelle?
Okay, so I'm looking at that, but what I'm finding right now is for grass treatment. So I haven't found anything that you can get for orchards. Is this the first time that you're finding some?
Well, we've had the same defoliation issue maybe 2 years ago or so. We have put down milky spores in the yard, and we thought that that would be good for a couple of years at least, and it's only been about 2 years since that application was put down, but they're just losing their leaves almost overnight. It's that bad.
And it's right now that you're seeing them, right?
Yes. Yeah. It's right now.
Yeah. So I've seen June beetles. I hear them at my door right now. They're emerging, and I'm surprised that you have such high populations. What I can tell you on the milky spore is that that does not work. It doesn't work for Japanese beetle, and I don't think it works for any insect really. It just takes too long to build up in the soil to take care of the larvae or the grubs that you would have in the soil. I would suspect that you're going to have to look for an insecticide to spray on them at this point. And I would suspect that it would be anything that you would use for a Japanese beetle would work on a June beetle. But I can't find anything at the moment that would be super helpful for the adults. I'm sorry. Can we get back to this in a minute?
Sure, absolutely. We'll do a little research and then we'll bring that in a little bit later. So thank you for the question, Monique. Let's then go to Roseanne in Alma. Hi, Roseanne.
Hello. I have a 5-year-old contender peach tree that last year I left too many peaches on it to mature, and about two of the pretty good sized branches broke down. And now this year, the entire tree just does not look healthy. It's leafing out, but there's still some branches, or some of the branches are not putting out any new leaves. And I'm wondering what I can do to help rejuvenate that, if there's some minerals or fertilizer or something that I can do to help get this back into production.
Okay, so even though contender seems to be one of those varieties that we think about being a little bit more cold hardy, when you combine the fact that peaches in general are not... they are very tender and they tend to have much more cold damage with the fact that you had a considerable crop. That means that the tree entered the fall and the winter with a little bit less reserve, so a little bit less prepared to withstand some of those cold temperatures, even if the winter is not extremely cold. So the tree was a little bit stressed already because of that high crop. And I don't blame you that you really wanted to have that high crop, because who doesn't want to have peaches? So usually what we would advise in a commercial setting is to do some thinning and reduce the number of fruits. But I understand that it's usually not the case for homeowners, and especially if you get a crop every, you know, maybe 3 or 4 years. So what you could do now is I would advise you to prune, and even if you start pruning right now, it's just fine. Remove some of those branches that are dead and then they're not growing. Remove them from the base, and that would encourage new growth. I would not recommend you to go crazy with the fertilizer, because what you're going to do is you're going to have a lot of growth, and that growth is going to have a hard time stopping in the fall and also preparing for the winter, and then you're going to end up with the same problem, which all of those new shoots are going to have a lot of water in them, and they're going to be much more sensitive to cold damage. So pruning, regular application of fertilizer, if you want to put some nitrogen, some phosphorus, some potassium, just low doses, and hopefully that's going to help encourage new growth, and your tree will recover by next year.
Okay. Thank you so much, Roseanne. I appreciate that call. This is Garden Talk. I'm Jill Nadeau, sitting in for Larry Mueller today. today on the Ideas Network. We're talking about growing fruit on the show today. Do you have any questions or comments? You can send us an email at ideas@wpr.org. Our phone lines are full right now, but we just lost one. So go ahead, 800-642-1234. Coming up next Friday on Garden Talk, our guest is the author of a new book that shows how you can use natural science to get better results. Hope you can join us for that. And right now, over that little break, we were able to get some information about the June bugs. What did you find out, Christelle?
Hi, so thank you for the question. When I was looking, there's a publication from PJ Leash, or insect diagnostician, that you can find on the Wisconsin Horticulture on June beetle. And so that would be a publication that you probably can find on the Plant Disease Diagnostic Lab. They have a bunch of fact sheets there.
You can find it in our website.
Also, that's true. And there's one specifically on June beetle that would apply for Wisconsin. So that's really nice. And in general, really, they're not a problem. Like, you see them every year. And they will fly to like lights, and that's why I was saying I see a lot that are coming to my house right now. But what you can do if really you have a problem would be to use one of those broad spectrum insecticides. So it would be like your 7, for example, a carbaryl or a pyrethroids that you can find at your garden store.
Okay.
So something you would use for Japanese beetle should work as a contact insecticide just the same way.
Okay, great. Thank you so much for looking that up. We did get an email from Paul who said that his apple tree produces fruit every other year. Is there a product that you can spray on the tree to reduce fruit production so it can produce every year? Or does he just have to think of his crop I'm assuming that means thin my crop by hand each year?
Well, that's the answer.
Okay.
The problem is that apple trees produce more fruit, and they set more fruit that they can actually take all the way to harvest and ripe. That also creates that the following year, because it produces so many fruits this current year, the following year is going to produce less flowers. And so the only thing that you can do to help that is by thinning. And in commercial orchards, we're all about thinning. And actually, this is the time of the year where we're thinning. So as a homeowner, what you should do is a year like this, which actually we have a beautiful bloom in apples, is to remove all of the lateral flowers in the inflorescence. The inflorescence of apples usually have 5 flowers. The center one is the king, is the one that opens first and the one that's going to give you the biggest fruit. And so you keep that one and you remove all the lateral ones, all the rest 4 ones, and that should definitely help reduce that biennial cycling.
So you should do that now. You shouldn't wait.
Yes, now is the time. The earlier you do it, the better. And now that we've kind of like passed already the petal fall stage, that's the best time to do it.
Okay, well, good time for that question, Paul. Thank you. Let's go to the phones again. We've got Esty in Madison. Esty,
thank you. Yeah, I grow several fruit trees organically, and especially the apple, but also the peach tend to get some bugs that crawl into them. And I wonder what I can do to prevent that organically. My son-in-law was using sulfur on their orchard, and he says it's organic. I wonder if it is, and you know, just what advice can you give me?
Christelle, that's in your area.
Hi, thank you for the question, Esty. This is very interesting to have insects that go into your apples and your peaches. Is there any description that you can give of those insects, and what time of the year would that be?
I'm afraid I wasn't paying that close attention. The ones in the apples are, you know, they're kind of, I have brown holes, and the creatures are in it. They look like, they are worms, little worms.
Yeah, kind of pinkish.
I'm thinking whitish, but yeah, you could think of them as pinkish.
Okay. So it depends also on the size. Do they look more like a maggot, do you think, or bigger than a maggot?
Maggot, pretty much.
Okay, so that would be your apple maggot, most likely, and they would make those kind of brownish trails inside there. So what you can do in the end, organically, for any insect, you can bag the fruit. So if you really want to have some fruit, that's your best option. Sulfur will not do anything on your insects, so I wouldn't even go there if you're trying to treat for insects. That will be for diseases that you could consider that, and Patty could speak to that if that's a question you have. But for insects, that's not going to be your option. So you can bag the fruit. That's the easiest, most organic way. You prevent insects from getting in the fruit, but you have to do that on every individual fruit. Another option you can do is spray a kaolin clay. The name of that is Surround, and that's something that will prevent apple maggot and also plum crocolia, which is another pest insect of apple, from laying eggs in those fruit. So it's kind of a clay that you put on there, and it's a physical barrier for those insects. So that's organic. That would be an option. And then you can go into products like Entrust that would be organically approved also, and that could help in mitigating insect problems that you may have. That will work better on other insects than apple maggot per se, but it would still help in controlling them a little bit. But those are the main options that you would have.
Okay, great. Thank you. And thank you for the question, Esty. Patty, you know, a lot of people have apples and there are diseases that they get. What are some of the ones that are most common and what are things that we can do now to stop it?
Okay, well, far and away, the most common apple disease that people encounter in commercial production in Wisconsin, but also in backyards, is apple scab. It's a fungal disease. And really the best way to control it is to get varieties that are not very susceptible to apple scab. So there are some that are very resistant, as in immune. I hate to use that word immune because plants don't really have immune systems, but they really do not get disease. But, you know, there are varieties that are just more resistant than others. So, for example, Honeycrisp is much more resistant genetically than Macintosh, for example, or Cortland. Cortland's very susceptible. Mm. So that's a good approach. This time of year, if you do have susceptible varieties, with all the rain we've been having, if you haven't sprayed anything to control apple scab, you could be in for some problems. It's a little bit late to get started spraying, but if you do want to protect some fruit, it's not, you know, you could even do some spraying now, and if the weather turns a little bit warmer, drier, we could have pretty good crop with some spraying. But unfortunately, on the susceptible varieties, fungicides are often necessary.
Okay.
Yeah, so I guess just another disease that shows up later in the season is sooty blotch and fly speck, and these cause the little black specks and smudges that you see on fruit. Completely harmless. You can just peel the fruit and eat it, bake it. Likewise with apple scab, the fungus does not produce any toxins that are harmful to people, so you can peel away the scab lesions, or even if you consume a little bit of it, it's not going to be a problem.
So even if it looks bad, it doesn't mean it doesn't taste good, right?
Yeah, I wouldn't go for a fruit that's cracked open, because mm-hmm. once it cracks open, then you get all sorts of, potentially you get bacteria in there that you don't want to be eating or trying to make things out of.
Okay, great. Thank you. We'll go back to the phones now, and we have Suzanne in Stoughton. Hi, Suzanne.
Hi, thank you for taking my call.
What's your question?
I am looking to, add some fruit into our property, and thinking about maybe doing some double duty with making something similar to like a moon gate and using it as a grape arbor, and then having raspberries or blueberries trellised toward the sides. And I'm wondering if they grow well together. Our soil is very clay-like and rocky, so I'm probably going to end up digging a lot of it out and either amending or replacing. And if you can make any suggestions on, you know, what type of soil they like or what sort of varieties might be successful in something like that.
Okay, so in terms of varieties, we have a publication that you can find it at the Learning Store, the UW Extension Learning Store. And the name of the publication is Home Fruit Cultivars for Southern Wisconsin. And we actually just update them. You can find varieties of all sorts of fruit crops, but also for raspberries and for grapes. So I would recommend you to go there and look, because every variety has their own characteristics. And I don't know really what you're looking in terms of fruit. The other thing related about soil is that in general, all fruit crops like good drainage. They just don't like to have, you know, their roots wet in saturated soil all the time. If you have a heavy soil that has a lot of clay, it's going to hold more moisture and it's going to dry. It's going to take longer to dry. So that could be a problem. You could put some amendment. You could put some compost. You can mix it with sand. Anything that you can do to encourage drainage. If you can put drainage tile, I know that that's a lot. But anything that you can do to improve drainage is definitely going to help the establishment of either the grapes or the raspberries. The only other thing that I would point out, and it was actually Christelle who pointed that out, if you're thinking about raspberries, spotted wing Drosophila is a big problem. So it's not that I'm disencouraging you, but I just want to make you aware that you will have a spotted wing Drosophila, but that would not be the case if you're planting grapes.
Explain what that is.
Sure. So spotted wing Drosophila is an invasive fruit fly. It's a very small fly, so you might not see them. They look like you're a fruit fly in your kitchen. But if you grow raspberries, you're almost guaranteed. We don't really find a lot of people that don't have spotted wing Drosophila in their berries. And that will be raspberry, blackberries are the main problems. And blueberry are also a problem. But what you will get if you use that more as a decorative way is not only will you not have fruit, but you'll have rotting fruit. And they turn to mush very quickly, within like 3 days or so. So I would not encourage that. And also they have, raspberries tend to have a lot of diseases that are associated with the plants. So they don't look necessarily so great if you want to have something kind of on the decorative side. So I wouldn't recommend raspberries. And like Amaya said, grapes would probably be your best bet. They look beautiful. If you want to put them on trellis, they look really great. And you're going to have less insects that are going to be rotting your fruit away.
Okay, great. Great advice. Next up, we have Lori in La Crosse. Hi, Lori.
Hi.
What can we help you with today?
Well, my husband and I bought a place a few years ago just east of La Crosse, and it has an old orchard that is a little over 100 years old in the back. We've got maybe 25, 30 trees in it, and there are a couple of yellow varieties and several red varieties. And we're wondering if there's any way that we can do any DNA testing or anything to find out what varieties they might be, and maybe even think about planting some of the newer ones, because obviously after 100 years, some of them aren't even producing much anymore.
So regarding doing some DNA testing, the only place that I know that does some DNA testing for variety recognition is at UC Davis in California. It's extremely expensive, so I don't think that, I mean, unless you want to spend the money, that would be an option. But you can just go online and Google variety ID or fruit tree ID UC Davis, and you will probably find a link and some information about that. The other place where I would recommend you to go is two websites. One is fruitid.com. You can add some characteristics there of the type of color maybe of the fruit and the size and when you harvest them, when do they bloom. They start have several criteria. The same way, there's another website, it's called Orange Pippin. So orange as the color, PIPPIN.com, is the same thing. You can put in there multiple characteristics of those trees, like the color of the fruit, the size of the fruit, when it's ready, and you will be able to narrow it down. It'll show you some pictures, and then you might be able to identify. That's the only other resources. There are thousands of apple cultivars, and there's also a lot of them that used to be grown by just out of seeds, so it's really difficult to be able to identify them.
And as far as her updating her 100-year-old orchard, should she be thinking about replacing some of the trees?
If you are going to replace some of the trees, what I would recommend you is do not plant new trees where you had the old trees. So if you had rows, shift the rows or try to find new spots where there were no apple trees before, because if not, you're going to have what we call a replant disease, in that the new trees are really not going to grow well, always going to be sort of stunted, and you're going to have a hard time getting them to grow and produce any fruit.
Oh, that's very interesting. I'd never heard that before. So, okay, lots of great advice there for you, Lori. We are talking about fruit today with our guests from UW Extension and UW-Madison. Do you have any questions about growing fruit? Is there a disease that you're worried about? Do you have some kind of insects? We do have open lines. The number, 1-800-642-1234. You can also email us at ideas@wpr.org, or you can post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. So let's go back. We've got, Clay online. Hi, Clay. You're in Milwaukee. What's your question?
Yes, I have a potted grapefruit, which I put outside in the spring, and it's lost its luster. Like, the leaves were waxy, and now they've gotten dull, and they're not as deep green. And I think there are chiggers I saw on the pot. They're like little bright orange dots that crawl around. I'm wondering, is that any danger to humans, and what, can I bring it back on the house in the fall? And I don't expect to ever get fruit from it. I'm growing it more as an experiment. And also, are they exactly chiggers? Because from what I tried to read up on chiggers, they like moist organic material, but generally I see them like on the leaves of a plant. And I see them, like when I go to the post office or my dentist, they're usually like on a metal door. So I'm wondering where they come from, any way to control them, and are they dangerous to humans?
Christelle?
So I think you hit it right when you said, I wonder if they are chiggers. You can have, there's a lot of red mites that you can see that are just walking around that are really small that can be on plants and will be found on citrus trees, on different kind of plants. So I think the first step I would take before going there is really collect some and send them to PJ Leash or insect diagnostician and make sure that we know what we're talking about. I don't even know if chiggers are present in Wisconsin, and that would be something that I would have to dig information about. I've heard a lot about chiggers as far as like being a problem, but I've never heard of them being a problem in Wisconsin. So I would say primarily it's most likely to be a red mite that are known to cause problems in different crops. And so I would start with that, trying to identify that. And if you send those to PJ Leash, he will give you the information on what to do once he identifies exactly what it is. But my inclination is that it's a red mite, and it could be problematic if you have high populations, but not so much if you don't have that. So I would err on that side.
Okay. I will just say something extra about that. In my previous experience growing citrus, you usually have them where it's hot and dry and you have a lot of dust. You tend to have on the border of blocks on citrus production, whether it's oranges or lemons or whatever it is. And so what our recommendation was always to just wash the trees with just a hose and clean them and take the dust out, and that could help. So if this has been inside, that might be the case. It's been, you know, it's not getting wet. It's not getting, you know, the leaves are not getting clean. So you could take it out and just wash it and wash off some of those mites, if they're mites.
Or if it's not too big, you can put it in the shower.
No, I guess so, yeah.
I've done that before. That works. All right. Well, and as far as getting grapefruit, do you think, I mean, we can get lemons and limes in our homes. Do you think that he could get a grapefruit?
If you have enough sunlight,
okay,
and you're producing flowers, yes, you can get fruit.
All right. Well, let's hope your experiment works, Clay. Thank you so much for that call. Let's go to Tom in Mineral Point. Hi, Tom.
I'd just like to ask about, I'm having trouble with rust in my apple trees, and it seems like the Honeycrisp are the worst.
Okay.
That's the thing with that.
Patty,
that
can rust? You?
The leaves turn brown, and then the fruit gets kind of like scabby looking on a.
Sound familiar, Patty?
Is that rust? Or?
Well, there are other things that turn leaves brown and the fruit gets scabby looking. So I think it would be a good thing if you have symptoms showing up this year, be sure to send them in. We have a disease diagnostic clinic here at UW-Madison. The website for the clinic is pddc.wisc.edu. That's abbreviation for Plant Disease Diagnostic Clinic. So you do want to get a diagnosis to make sure that you're going to be treating the right thing. In terms of rust in particular, the spores that cause rust on apple actually come from juniper trees. And the main time the spore release is right around bloom. So here in southern Wisconsin, we're actually beyond the main time when you'd be getting infection of apple trees with rust spores from junipers. But the fungicide mancozeb, which I sometimes have seen at garden stores, that's M-A-N-C-O-Z-E-B, mancozeb, provides some protection of the fruit from rust. Leaves, interestingly enough, you can get a lot of disease on leaves, but rust usually does not want to defoliate a tree. It will cause spots, but it usually doesn't defoliate. Not, I say usually. If it's really bad, the leaves will start falling off. If this has been something that's caused defoliation for you, I would wonder if it's a different problem, scab or some other disease.
Okay, so get those samples, and you'll get an answer. Okay, Tom, thank you very much. Let's go to Rosario next in McHenry, Illinois. Hi, Rosario.
Hi, how are you?
I'm well. Thank you. What do you have for us?
Yes, so just I want to just make a small tiny comment regarding the big tree. I heard it before, a couple of calls before, one lady, I'm sure, like you, I used to be myself too, is sick and tired of putting the big tree in and out of the garage. So, and I found out from two friends, they used to do the same way, but the big tree can stay outside. You can plant outside. The only thing you have to, and I have a big one, it's growing every year, it's bigger and bigger. The only thing you have to, the branches are so flexible, that so you can put, mesh down all the way down to the ground almost and cover very, very well. And next year we'll come back again nice and produce figs. Now, the figs, they won't come maybe, I don't know, if pretending it is, I don't know, 200 figs. Probably will come up and maybe nice and ripe in all season, maybe, I don't know, 70, 80, 90. Not all, because some of the stay still green and all small. Isolated. Everything has to be covered. That's my comment.
Okay, well, thank you so much for that.
I just want to clarify one thing, is that I see that you are in Northern Illinois, and the plant cold hardiness zone map of Northern Illinois is much warmer than in Wisconsin. Mm-hmm. So that definitely makes a difference. Sometimes just a couple of degrees different can kill a plant or not. So sure. I would still be cautious about it.
And he was talking about putting the plant in the ground and covering it
with soil
in the winter.
Yeah.
So that's an important part of that too. Right. Okay, great. Well, thank you very much for calling, letting us know that. If you've got a question or comment about fruit, please give us a call, 800-648-1234. We are talking with Amaya Atucha. She is an UW Extension Fruit Crop Production Specialist and Assistant Professor of Horticulture at UW-Madison. Patricia McManus is also with us. She's a UW Extension Fruit Crops Plant Pathologist and Professor and Chair in the Department of Plant Pathology at UW-Madison, and Christelle Godeau, Assistant Professor in the Department of Entomology at UW-Madison and Fruit Crop Entomology and Extension Specialist. What questions do you have? Give us a call, 1-800-642-1234, or email us at ideas@wpr.org. You're listening to Garden Talk. I'm Jill Nadeau, sitting in for Larry Mueller today on the Ideas Network. Hope you can join us on Monday when we're going to talk to the authors of two different cookbooks, one on cooking with lake fish, or freshwater fish, and the other on using smoke when you grill. So you want to tune in for that. That's at 11 and 11:45 on Monday. But right now, we are talking about fruit, and we're going to go right to the phones because we have a lot of callers. And first up, we have Fred in Madison. Hi, Fred.
Yes, ma'am. And thank you for picking up my phone. I have a property that about 30 years ago, I planted 20 to 25 trees, apples, pears, and plums. And for the first 5-6 years, I was getting quite a bit fruit out of it. But all of a sudden, the trees grew, and they didn't get enough light and all that. And they sort of stopped even blooming. Here and there, I guess some. So the past winter, I pruned them. I brought it down to almost 8-9 feet high. And I wanted to know, is there any recommendation you all have so I can help these trees?
Well, okay. What you would be wanted to is just to have flowers induced for the following year out of new shoots that are going to be growing. So just, you know, let them grow. Make sure that they're getting plenty of light to have flowers. The most important factor for flower induction is light interception. That's why when you have a big tree, the center of the tree, in the center of the canopy, there's usually not a lot of fruit. All of it is on the periphery, on the outside, is because that's where the light is being intercepted. So my advice is just let them grow. Don't over-fertilize them. Let them grow as much as they need to grow without encouraging it with nitrogen. And just hope that next year a lot of that new growth is gonna have some flowers.
Okay. Well, good luck, Fred. I hope that works for you. Next, let's go to Dan in Madison. Hi, Dan. What can we help you with?
Hey, I was just calling to see if I may be able to get some information about a pear tree. I believe it's a Bartlett pear tree. that my son and I planted maybe 3 years ago. Seem to be doing well, but no production at this point, and don't really know a whole heck of a lot about it, them, and, you know, wondering if I needed a second pollinator or if I just need more patience.
No, you need a second pollination and patience. No, you need another cultivar. That's usually the problem. So if you have a cross pollination problem there. So just adding a different cultivar. And as I already said, I see that you are in Madison. So this would work. The extension publication that we have for home fruit cultivars for southern Wisconsin is available at the UW Extension Learning Store. We have there listed several cultivars for pears. So there's a lot of them, Flemish Beauty, Gem, Gourmet, Summer Crisp. There's a number of ones that we've listed and that they have different harvest time as well, and any of them would work.
Okay, great. Next up is Rick in Green Lake. Hi, Rick.
Yes, hi. Really enjoying your show. Couple quick questions. One, I have a plum tree that's got puts out grapefruit every year, but it's also now got these black knotty growths on the branches that my understanding is that if we aggressively prune the branches that we might be able to save it. So I wondered about that. And two, we've got a bunch of Montmorency cherry trees that are about 3 years old that are doing really well. But we've been getting hit for the last couple of years aggressively with Japanese beetles. And I'd like to know what I can use to treat the trees with, if anything, without putting my fruit at risk. We've got the bags, and they do work, but we've got so much foliage and crab apples and things on the property that we just, when we get hit, they're aggressive. So I wondered about that as well.
Well, let's start with Patty with those growths, and then we'll go on to our friend, the Japanese beetle.
Yeah, those black knotty growths that you're seeing, that's the symptom of a disease called black knot. Very descriptive. The concern I have with aggressive pruning this time of year or during the growing season is twofold. One, it's really hard to see very well just where those growths are. And before you get the black knotty growths, you actually have sort of a soft green swollen area. So those are really hard to see. So it's hard to do a good job. Second concern is that you could overly invigorate the tree by pruning right now, and so you could actually, you know, just horticulturally, it might not be the best thing to do. So I do think in the winter, though, aggressive pruning, it's really about the only option you do have. There are some fungicides that you can use. They're not highly effective, though, if you don't also do the pruning. So aggressive pruning, but wait until winter, or I should say late winter, so the time that you would be pruning fruit trees anyway, so late February or into March. And I'm going to pass the Japanese beetle question off. not my territory.
Thank you, Patty. I appreciate it. So, yes, Japanese beetle is one of our very good friends that we talk about all the time. And I really don't know what to tell you. There's not much that you can do that will prevent them from coming back because they are very strong flyers. They emerge from any kind of grassy area, which we have plenty of. And they will just come from your neighbors. So you can spray insecticides, and they are effective, and your contact insecticides, so they will work for a certain period of time, but you will have new Japanese beetle that will come in from outside, right? So you can do what you've been doing. I don't think that I have a silver bullet for you. Japanese beetle are here, and they will stay, and they will keep emerging throughout most of the summer. So by Father's Day is when you're going to start seeing them. One thing I would say in general terms, I mentioned it a little bit earlier, is a lot of people talk about milky spore. There's no good research results that show it works. It does not work. It's not effective. It could work in a very long term, possibly if it builds up enough that the bacteria is there enough to work. But there's no data that shows that it is actually effective. So keep doing what you're doing. Keep using the same insecticide that you're using, because I don't know what else you can do.
Yes, it's not a great situation for anybody on that. Thank you, Rick. Let's go stay with fruit and talk to Mary Jane in Madison. Hi, Mary Jane.
Hi, thank you.
You bet.
Yes, so what I have is a problem with some fruit trees. My son, when he was just like 10, 11, his grandmother, he was eating an orange hybrid, and his grandmother said, oh, you know, you can put these and do this and this, and he did. And now it's, you know, 30 years later, and he still has these full-grown trees. He keeps them inside in the winter and takes them out, you know, in the summer. But this year he has a problem. And two of them actually produce fruit. And this year, all of a sudden, he's having a problem. Well, one of them has had a problem for a while. And there's something wrong on the bark, and it's broken open. And I took some pictures. It's quite nasty looking. And now the leaves are deforming and falling off rapidly, and they're falling off now. He tells me, like, whole branches, they're just falling to the ground. And so I wonder if there's anything you can help. He also said that every time he would water them, more leaves would fall.
Okay, well, that doesn't sound too healthy. Anybody have any ideas?
So what was the first reason why the branches were broken?
No, the branches weren't broken. It just split kind of at a point where it branches out, and that bark broke open, and it's just become more and more.
And you said these are orange trees, correct?
Yeah, it's some sort of a hybrid orange.
Sure, from a seed.
From a seed,
uh-huh. Yeah, right. Do we have any idea what could be going on with the orange?
How much? It's very difficult to diagnose this, but has anything changed in terms like irrigation of that tree? It's potted, so something like maybe more water than usual that could generate some crown problem on the base of the trunk that might be debilitating that tree. That might be one thing. I would pass it to Patty, but just look at maybe just dig up and look at the roots where they look healthy.
Yeah, boy, I don't know. I mean, you know, being in Wisconsin, don't have a lot of experience with citrus. So there are fungal diseases that can cause slow decline, or, you know, cankers and then slow decline of the tree. But I don't have a good diagnosis just based on the description here.
Is there some place where she could maybe look? I mean, would it make sense to contact maybe someone in Florida, since they've got lots of citrus down there? Did that make sense?
Well, I believe you said you took some photographs. Is that correct?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
So the Plant Disease Diagnostic Clinic will look at photographs.
Because he's coming in this holiday weekend, and he could bring some leaves and, you know, some of the dead branch, if that were helpful, and we could take it on over to the university.
That might be helpful.
Okay.
All right. Well,
so,
yeah.
Do we know when they are open?
Well, not over the weekend, but during normal business hours. The address for the Plant Disease Diagnostic Clinic is 1630 Linden Drive on the UW campus, right across from Babcock, the ice cream store. That's the way we always tell people how to find it.
You can also mail in samples if your son was interested in doing that.
Or take them to your county extension office.
Okay, well, good luck, Mary Jane. An unusual question, but lots of ways that you can go with that. Let's take Elaine in Stockbridge next. Hi, Elaine.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call. I have a question about thimbleberries. I planted three plants in my yard, specific to what the directions said, and that was 3 years ago, and I'm still not getting any fruit. Last year, I did get flowers. I didn't try self-pollinating or whatever. I just left them alone. And this year they're looking grand again. They're full of leaves and everything, and I suspect I'm going to get flowers. But how do I get fruit?
Okay, well, thanks, Elaine. Do we know?
Well, they usually just grow in the wild, and I assume that there are multiple, I mean, not varieties, but just the fact that they grow in the wild and they're all, like, cross-pollinated, that could probably be one of the reasons. To tell the truth, I don't know much about thimbleberries. What I've been reading about is that the most productive canes are the older ones. So you said you planted this 3 years ago?
Yes.
So, for what I know, it's the most productive ones are around 2 to 3 year old canes. So that's where you will gonna get most of your fruit. So maybe just wait this season and see if that's the case with those canes that are around 3 year old, 2 to 3 year old.
Would you suggest you get another plant?
Yes. Always having, you know, multiple varieties help with cross-pollination, even when they're self-fruitful.
Mm-hmm. And it's a very unusual fruit, but like you said, it's more in the wild.
Yes.
Yeah. And why don't you describe with just a few seconds what they look like, in case anybody's not sure.
They're very similar to a raspberry.
Yes, sort of a pink but long, right? Okay. All right. Look them up if you want to know. We're talking about fruit crops today with our guests. They're Maya Atucha, UW Extension Fruit Crop Production Specialist and Assistant Professor of Horticulture at UW-Madison, Patricia McManus, UW Extension Fruit Crop Plant Pathologist and Professor and Chair in the Department of Plant Pathology at UW-Madison, and Christelle Godeau, Assistant Professor in the Department of Entomology at UW-Madison and Fruit Crop Entomology and Extension Specialist. Stay with us. There's more to come on the Ideas Network. We are talking about fruit today with our guests. Hi, I'm Jill Nadeau. Thanks for joining us on the Ideas Network for Garden Talk today. We're talking to Amaya Atucha, Patricia McManus, and Christelle Godeau, and they are all specialists in one form or other on fruit. So whatever questions you have, give us a call. And the number is 1-800-642-1234. We do have an open line. And you can also send us an email. It's at ideas@wpr.org, or you can post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. And let's go right back to the phones, and we're going to talk to Brenda in Phillips next. Hi, Brenda.
Hi. I was wondering about mulberry trees. I live in a kind of a zone 4, probably a zone 3, and I'm just wondering if I would have any success. They look like they'd be something really interesting.
Yes, you can grow mulberry trees. You can just buy them at a nursery, or you can actually propagate them from cuttings. You can just cut, if you have a neighbor or you have somebody that has a tree, you can just cut some of the new shoots and then just dip a little bit of the cutting into a rooting solution and then just plant them. They don't seem to be very popular.
Okay, I'll pitch in here. This is the entomologist. I have mulberry in my backyard, and I have no idea how to get rid of them. So I would really be cautious on planting mulberry, because once you have them, they grow everywhere. They're almost impossible to kill, and they will produce fruit. So you'll get fruit, that's for sure. And the fruit is pretty good, but you will also have insects that are going to come and share those with you, like that spot-winged Drosophila I mentioned earlier. But really, once you have mulberry on your property, you're going to have a lot of mulberry. They start everywhere. They spread like crazy, and they're almost impossible to get rid of. So that's my advice, is plant them far away.
And Brenda, if you really want mulberry, maybe just find someone who has them. They'll be happy to share, I'm sure. Okay, well, let's go next to Christina in Glenwood City. Hi, Christina.
Hi there. Thank you. I have two questions.
Okay.
First, my flowering crabs are blooming. Can I safely prune them when they lose their blossoms?
Just like Patty was saying before about pruning in the summer after the tree starts growing. The only concern about that could be maybe some potential diseases, and that maybe Patty can talk to that. But in the point of view from horticulture, when you prune in the summer, when the trees are already growing and have leaves, it's a more of a debilitating process for the plant. You are taking away all of those shoots and leaves that are producing sugars and carbohydrates right in the time where they need them the most, because they're putting new growth. So that tends to kind of like reduce the size of the tree and stress a little bit the tree. If your goal is to reduce the number of maybe of suckers or water sprouts that you're getting, that could be a good idea to remove them during the summer. But if not, I will wait until the following spring, early spring, when they're still dormant. But then you have also kind of like passed the stage of really cold weather. So late March, I would say, would be a good time.
And Patty, did you have anything to add as far as if you do prune in the summer?
I agree with Amaya. I would discourage the pruning in the summer. One disease that a number of crab apple varieties and other varieties of apple in general and pear are susceptible to is fire blight, and that's caused by a bacterium and is highly contagious, and you can get it on pruning tools and spread it about. And it's just much safer to do it in the winter. If you try to prune fruit trees during the summer, we actually recommend that you sanitize tools between cuts, and that is inconvenient and hard on the tools. And so,
wait.
Just wait, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Now, Christina, you had another question?
Yes, I did. Thank you. I'm wondering what types of fruit and nuts trees are hardy for zone 3 or 4.
So we have another publication. Unfortunately, this one has not been updated yet. It's also called Home Fruit Cultivars for Northern Wisconsin. It's available at the UW Extension Learning Store. You can download the PDF, and it suggested a number of cultivars of different fruit crops that you can plant in northern Wisconsin.
And these publications are wonderful. There's all kinds of information in there. So, I would suggest you do that too, Christina. Let's go to Steve in Boulder Junction. Hi, Steve. Steve, are you with us? It looks like we lost Steve, but he was talking about espalier trees, and that's pretty decorative. I'm assuming, Amaya, you don't have any experience with that.
I don't have any experience with that. It's also pretty complex.
Mm-hmm.
You need to know quite a bit about pruning techniques, also grafting.
Yes.
So it's not only grafting the first time for the cultivar of your choice, but then afterwards you still graft in the middle of maybe some blank spaces where you don't have any growth and you want to have new growth so that it actually looks pretty, which is the final objective of this training system. So it's complex, it's not easy. And you were saying that
I know that Ulbrich here in Madison, yeah, and I'm assuming that a lot of the botanical gardens around the state have examples of that. So that might be a good place for him to go ahead and get some more information. So, so we do have some open lines. If you've got a question, 1-800-642-1234. Let's go to Matt next. He's in Madison. Hi, Matt.
Hello. I have a question. I moved into my house a couple of years ago, and there's quite a mature apple tree there. Not really sure what it is, but, it's probably about, the trunk is probably 10, 12 inches around. And somebody had, the last owner had topped it to prune it, I guess. I don't know what exactly happened. And, it's got lots of good growth and foliage on it, but I don't know if they knew what they're doing, because down from the top where they pruned it, there's some looks like rot in the bark. I don't know if it's a fungus or it doesn't really produce any fruits or anything. It just looks like it's almost like dry rot or rot, but there's still branches coming out of that same branch. I'm just wondering if there's anything I can do about that, or is the tree just going to die slowly?
Okay, thank you, Matt. Patty, can you help him out with that?
Well, I can try. Offhand, I can't. I guess I don't know exactly what this is. I do think it's fun, though, when we buy a new property to blame all the problems on the previous owners, whether it's the house or the yard or whatever. But it sounds like maybe it wasn't the best horticultural pruning done by the previous owner. If you can, if individual branches are affected, I would encourage you to send a sample into the diagnostic clinic to have a look. Otherwise, fungal diseases, trees can, particularly if it's a big tree, you can lose a lot of branches, even large branches, and the tree still survive. So I guess it just kind of depends on how far gone this is. But I'm inclined to say give it a chance this year. And maybe in the winter when you can see it better, take a good look, prune out dead branches, and just see how it does next spring.
Okay, thanks for the question, Matt. Next we have Mary in Lac des Fambeaux. Hi, Mary.
Hi there. I'm calling, we had some, this is actually, I'm up north, but this is down in Dane County. We had some landscaping done very late last fall. So about in October, we had two hackberry trees put in. And I understand that fruit is more for the birds than for people on those trees. But one of them is doing really great, leafed out, looks really healthy and happy. The other one leafed out, but every single branch, I think there's only one branch on the whole tree, and these are fairly tall trees, the growth tip is dead. So it has the branches have leaves, but closer towards the trunk. And I'm wondering what the fate of that tree will be, if that's fine, it's going to need another year or two to catch up a little bit. It doesn't seem like any of those branches are going to be able to grow, though.
So you were saying that you pruned the trees relatively late?
No, we didn't prune them. They were transplanted. They were installed in the yard late, like in October.
Yeah.
And one of them's doing great. The other one, though, the growth tips on every single branch are dead.
Yeah, what probably happened there is that that tree that you transplanted didn't have enough time to actually set roots in this new space where you put it. So it went into the winter stress, and that just encouraged more cold damage. And part of what you might be seeing is that, just the shock of the transplant and not having enough time to adapt. So it might come out of it if it's able to put new roots, but it might just happen that you're going to have to take it off. I'm not an expert on ornamental trees, but in general, I mean, trees are trees, and that's from a physiological perspective, that's what I think is happening.
Okay. Hope that works out for you, Mary. We've got open line, so if you have a question regarding fruit that grows in Wisconsin, give us a call, 1-800-642-1234. And, of course, you can always email us at ideas@wpr.org. We've got Angela on the phone, and she is calling from Minocqua. Hi, Angela.
Hi there. Yeah, we have put in an apple tree. It's a red baron, I believe. Apple tree and a crab apple tree in our backyard. This will be the third spring that we've had it. The first spring, they were beautiful, blossomed. We got fruit, not a lot, but about a dozen good apples off the small apple tree, the red baron. And last year, the crab apple flowered, but the apple, regular apple, didn't flower at all. And we kind of attributed it to late frost here in Minocqua. This year, we have just one branch that has about four flowers on the apple tree and no flowers on the crab apple. We're wondering about fertilizer spikes or if there's anything we can do.
No, this is generally not, when there's not enough flowers on a tree, on an apple tree, it's generally not associated with nutrient deficiencies. If you were to have a nutrient deficiency, you would probably see it in the foliage the year before. You would see some symptoms of nutrient deficiency. So this could be a couple of things. One, as you said, just very, very cold springs that might have just burned the flowers inside those buds. And then when the buds break, just you only see the leaves. It could also be that you might have the rootstock growing. Some of the branches are actually not really the variety, but rather the rootstock. Patty's pointing out sometimes lawn herbicides can damage the trees, especially if you're having some branches that have flowers and others that don't. So that is my thought. I mean, I cannot tell you pinpoint exactly what it is. I would look into if you see any damage on the base of the tree, and also if you see any growth coming from the rootstock, because those rootstocks are not going to produce flowers. They're just going to produce a lot of, you know, new branches with just vegetative growth.
Okay, thank you very much for that call, Angela. Let's go now to Bill in Wisconsin Rapids. Hi, Bill.
Hi. We have an apple tree, and the bottom is, like, in the center of the tree, it's rotting out. But I get lots of flower buds, but no apples. Is the trees just not good, or?
Do you only have that apple tree?
Yes.
Well, maybe you need another apple tree for cross-pollination.
Okay. It's always had apples before, but the last couple of years there's just no apples.
Well, probably most of the pollination was maybe coming from like ornamental crab trees or something like that. So my first thought would be to try to get another tree with a different variety to have more sources of pollen. That's usually the problem when you have flowers, but you don't set any fruit.
Okay, thank you so much for that call, Bill. We're talking about the apples and the flowers. It seems to be the first reaction of people to fertilize fruit trees. That's not necessarily the best way to go, is it?
In terms of flowers, to mm-hmm. produce flowers, it's really not what drives flower production, or what we call flower induction, that process in which the buds that are set during the growing season decide their destiny, whether they're going to have flowers the following year or they're just only going to produce leaves. And what the driving force there is mostly light. There's other things that are also part of it. For example, we talk what happened one year that you have a very heavy crop. The following year, you usually don't have a lot of flowers. And that is because those fruits that are growing at the same time that those buds are being induced are affected by some of the hormones that are being produced by the seeds and those growing fruits that happen simultaneously. But in general, it's not a nutrient deficiency. And if there were to be a nutrient deficiency, as I said, you would see a symptom.
Okay. And as far as the health of the tree in general, not necessarily the flowers,
in terms of fertilizing
them?
Well, if you have a tree that consistently produces every year, yes, you need to fertilize it, because every time you harvest that fruit is removing nutrients and you need to replace them, basically. So you will have to fertilize it. If you have a tree that doesn't produce a lot of fruit, maybe a very low doses of fertilizer. If you apply fertilizers of trees that are not very productive, a lot of that is just going to go into growing more shoots and more leaves.
Okay, thank you. Let's go to Judy in Fort Atkinson. Hi, Judy.
Hi. You were talking about mulberry trees, and we have a mulberry tree that's a good 50 years old, and it's never produced a single mulberry.
Hmm.
We've had an arborist come and look at it, and he said it's definitely a mulberry tree, but it's never produced anything.
Mulberry expert, Christelle.
I was just wondering about that very recently, and actually, there are mulberry plants that do not grow fruit. They're fruitless mulberry plants.
Okay.
The entomologist had the answer.
Yeah, because I was wondering about it, so I did a quick search, and indeed, there are some that are grown to not produce fruit. And so you can find information on fruitless mulberry trees.
So
if you've had it for so long and it never produced fruit, that's most likely what you have.
Well, that totally makes sense. I mean, they're a messy tree, so I'm sure...
It's better that they don't produce fruit, in my opinion.
Yeah.
I'm biased that way.
You're a little biased. She's a little biased. Okay, thanks, Judy. Our next call is from Norman in Wausau. Hi, Norman.
Hi. I wanted to ask your guest if she knew the reason why some of the grafted young plants, that have apple trees, that I grafted last year leafed out just beautifully, and they're doing fine. And I have a few of them that the rootstock is trying to leaf out. But even though they grew like 2 or 3 feet last year, they so far haven't shown any buds on them, whereas the other ones, the leaves are fully out. And then I have the same problem on some of my adult trees that a single limb just died, which was perfectly fine last year, and this year it's dead.
So let me see if I got the question right. So you said you grafted some apple trees, and they grew, the scion or the cultivar grew fine the last year, but this year the buds are still dormant and it's only the rootstock that is growing. Is that correct?
Correct.
So did you have those plants already outside?
Yeah, I grafted them outside. They were growing outside. I grafted them outside. They grew. I haven't moved them or done anything with them since a year ago this spring.
Well, if you were to just prune some of them and just look at inside the cuttings to see if they're dry or they're still green, if they're dry, I would say that it's probably cold damage. I know that the winter has not been extremely cold, but there's a lot of things that can play into having or not having cold damage, like whether the trees are stressed or not stressed, whether they went into rest or what we call dormancy early on, or they kept growing for a longer time because you were watering them or fertilizing them. There are multiple things. So I would guess that it could be cold damage just because what you are describing. But I would, if I were you, I would just go and look at those branches that are not breaking and see how the wood looks inside, whether it's still green or it's completely dry.
Okay, thanks for the call there, Norman. We did get an email from Brenda, and she said that there. What are the little worms that are in her gooseberries as soon as they start to ripen? Christelle, are you familiar with those little worms in gooseberries?
Oh, I do not know in particular what would be in gooseberry because I've never worked with gooseberry, but spotted-winged Drosophila do end up going in gooseberry. So I would suspect that it's very likely to be, though it's hard to tell from just the standpoint of a little worm kind of thing. So I don't know what time are you seeing them. Are you seeing them when they're ripening? Or
it was an email, so We don't have a whole lot of information. Is this something she should be sending to PJ?
Oh, on the Learning Store, Patty's saying there's some information, Bolton, on gooseberry, growing gooseberry in Wisconsin. Is
I think
that
it's
right?
Gooseberries, elderberries, and something else. Currants, I believe. We have all in one bulletin. And I don't know, but there is a section on insects. There might be something
and
there.
That would be good. It wouldn't have spotted-winged Drosophila, so if that's a new thing in your gooseberry, then it's possible that it is this insect that wouldn't be updated in that bulletin, but I would look into that, and then if it doesn't answer, then go to spotted wing as a potential.
Okay. All right. Thank you for that email, Brenda. Let's go to Paul in West Bend. Hi, Paul. What's your question?
Hey, I don't know if we've talked about plums yet today, but about 4 or 5 years ago already, I've planted two Italian plum trees, and I just have not seen any fruit. I've taken some time to remove some of the inside tighter branches, and they do get flowers on them, but nothing happens after that.
Okay, so in general, the Italian plum trees, they would be partially self-fruitful. It means that they could still produce fruit whether you don't have multiple varieties. We usually recommend for all European plums to have more than one, so you have cross-pollination. So that might be one of the reasons why you're not getting any fruit.
Okay. Well, thank you very much for that call, Paul. We really appreciate that. We did have a real quick call about peaches. Is there a publication for peaches that they can go to?
We don't have a publication on peaches itself, but in the same publication that we've been referring to, the Home Fruit Cultivars for Southern Wisconsin, we do have a little section on some peaches. What I want to say is that it's really hard to produce peaches. It's very much dependent on where you are in the state. They are not really cold hardy, even what we call cold hardy cultivars. Mm-hmm. So peaches might not be the best choice unless you are in a place where there's some sort of microclimate very close to the Big Lake that could work.
All right, great. Thank you very much. We've been talking about fruit crops with our guest today. I'm Maya Atucha. She's a UW Extension fruit crop production specialist and assistant professor of horticulture at UW-Madison. Patricia McManus, a UW Extension fruit crops plant pathologist and professor and chair in the Department of Plant Pathology at UW-Madison. And Christelle Godeau, assistant professor in the Department of Entomology at UW-Madison and fruit crop entomology and extension specialist. Thanks so much to Sarah Hopeful for technical direction today, and Jane Rotunda and Jason Butler for on-air production. Hope you can join us on Memorial Day. We'll be talking about how to cook lake fish and talk about using smoke when you grill. I'm Jill Nadeau, sitting in for Larry Mueller. Thanks so much for listening to the Ideas Network.